Okay, marvellous, marvellous. Welcome again to Gloucester Vineyard Church. As Diane said, my name is Daniel. I'm one of the pastors here. And this is a treat. We were meant to have my dear friend Ryan speak to us today, but he's under the weather, unfortunately. And he let me know yesterday. And so last night, I threw something together. I was inspired. Thank you. So today, I would love it if you would come with me on a journey and particularly help me. How about that? Should we do one together? Occasionally we do one of these. This is normally we're fairly collaborative on a Sunday. Welcome to a very collaborative Sunday. It's great to have you here with us. So quick show of hands, who here thinks they have the gift of patience? One, two, three, four-ish. Three and a half, four people in the room. Anybody in the room struggle with patience a little bit? Yes, that's most everybody else. I am definitely in the second category of people. I am not good at being patient. I don't like to wait, which is tricky because I have two children and I'm trying to teach them to be patient, and I'm not showing them good examples of my patience. I think in different circumstances, it's easier to be patient than others. It really does depend on the circumstances, doesn't it? So let's play a very quick game of easy to be patient for, difficult to be patient for. You see, already this is kind of coming together. Okay, so waiting for dinner to be cooked and not eating it as you go. Easy to be patient? Difficult to be patient. You are my people. Look at that. I'm a big one for eating as you go. And by the time you get to the meal, there's less there than there should be. And I'm kind of full. Okay, another one. Waiting for members of the family or friends to be ready to go out. Easy to be patient for those people. Difficult to be patient for those people. Yeah. Hands up if you are that person. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay, waiting for your dinner to arrive at a restaurant. This is an interesting one, isn't it? Because you order something and you're waiting for it to come and the kind of the normal amount of time elapses and you think, I'm sure it'll be here soon. And then some more time goes by. Easy to wait for? Okay, fair play. Difficult to wait for. Yeah. It's like it just starts ticking over and the longer that goes, you think, yeah, a couple more. Being on hold on the phone. No good. 30 minutes? 40 minutes? Anybody goes 40 minutes? What's the statute of limitations on waiting on the phone? Not good. Well, there you go, indeed. And the worst circumstance of waiting for is that little white caterpillar of doom. Your video is buffering. Ah! I could have been waiting for 30 seconds and it just feels like an eternity. We are an increasingly instant gratification culture, aren't we? I think just generally as a culture, we're not great at waiting for things. We want everything and we want it now. We're not good at waiting and I don't think we're getting any better, but at least as a nation, we can pride ourselves on our ability to wait with dignity. I mean, what is queuing if not waiting with good order and dignity? Now, most of those examples are pretty trivial, but it wouldn't take us long to think of some examples of things that we are waiting for, which are more serious and have a greater impact. We could think of lots of heavier examples, but as I was preparing this last night, I was thinking about our friends Danny and Maddie, who broke down near our house a couple of weeks ago in their car, and they waited. How many hours? Did you wait? 14 hours overnight in the car, very cold, waiting for the breakdown service to arrive. Not cool. And so, as has been mentioned a handful of times today, as a church community and as churches around the world, we are in a season which is called Advent, which is all about waiting, which is all about anticipation, which is all about looking forward to Jesus being born and waiting in great anticipation for that moment. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit this afternoon. So quick show of hands, who here has an Advent calendar? Yes. That's about a third of the room. Anybody got a cool grown-up Advent calendar? Yes. Okay. Quickly turn to the people around you, those guys you've just said hello to. Share. If you've got an Advent calendar, tell them about it, especially if you've got a cool grown-up one. And if you don't have one, then just answer the question, what did you do about Advent calendars when you were growing up? You've got literally 30 seconds. Just go for it. Okay, that's literally it, 30 seconds, that's all I'm giving you. Can I have a volunteer? Has anybody got a cool grown-up Advent calendar they can share with me? You said you had one, what's your cool grown-up Advent calendar?
Every year my mum fills up a load of pouches for all of us kids, as we're adults, with a little card of the story of Advent, and then either like a celebrations or a bar of soap or something like that.
And how old are you now?
21.
21, and it's still happening. any more? Is that going to end at any stage, or is it just going to carry on? Anybody else got a cool grown-up Advent calendar? Yes, come on, let's hear about yours. What have you got?
We've got a very sophisticated Advent candle, and it's so fat, it takes about 6 hours to burn each number.
Oh, nice. Very good. Anybody else got an Advent candle? Oh, I love an Advent candle. It's very cool. Very good. Thanks for that. Advent is a time all about waiting. It's about anticipation, as I said. It's all about looking forward to the birth of Jesus. That moment when we know that Jesus is going to be born and we get to tuck into some turkey or a very disappointing vegan alternative to turkey. But I wonder if you've ever thought, about the very first Advent, the very first time a group of people were waiting for Jesus to be born. The first time there was a community looking forward in hope to Christmas Day. Because the reality is that the very first Advent was super, super long. The first community to wait for Jesus to be born were not waiting 24 days every December. They were waiting for hundreds and hundreds of years. And also, unlike us, that first community that celebrated Advent, they didn't know exactly when Jesus was going to be born. So for us, living after the event, we know that every December rolls around, and on the 25th day of December, it happens every year without fail. Christmas happens on the 25th of December. No. But for that first community experiencing Advent, they had no idea when it was going to come to an end. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time this afternoon just thinking about that community and that first Advent and seeing what we can draw from that ahead of this Christmas. How does that sound? Great, good. One of you's up for that. I'm pleased. So if you pick up your Bible and start reading at the first biography of Jesus' life, written by a guy called Matthew, you're going to really quickly come across a funny little word that none of us use in everyday conversations. In fact, you're going to come across it in the very first verse. Now, one of the things that's happening today is we're having fun with the slides. So the slides might not work. It's working. Wonderful. Let's go with it. So it comes along in the very first verse of the first chapter of the book of Matthew. It says this: "This is a record of the ancestors of Jesus, the Messiah, a descendant of David and of Abraham." So there's that word, Messiah. Who used that in a sentence this week? No, you did. Did you? Well, I'm not surprised. And then there's a big long list, like a big family tree. And then at the end of it, it says, "And all those above include 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the Babylonian exile, and 14 from the Babylonian exile to the Messiah." It's back. That weird word is back. And then it launches into the birth narrative. That birth narrative, which is about to get butchered, performed by primary school children up and down the country in the next couple of weeks. And it says this. The very next verse says, "This is how Jesus, the Messiah, was born. Mary was engaged to be married to Joseph," etc., etc., etc. We know the story. So straight out of the gate, Matthew is assuming that we know something, isn't he? He's assuming that we know what that word means. And unless you've watched Dune recently, we may not have a really good idea of what Messiah is or what Messiah might be. So this is the moment when you guys come and you help me out. So why don't you tell me, using as very little Bible language as you can, what does Matthew mean by the word Messiah? Or what does the concept of Messiah mean more broadly? If you could put it into a really short sentence with as little Bible language as you can, what would you say? Put your hand up if you want to speak into the microphone. Yes, good. The first buffalo into the Nile.
King.
Excellent. Thank you. King. Anybody else? Yes. Okay, over here.
Paraphrase, but like superhero.
Superhero, okay, very good. Oh yeah, and another one.
Rescuer.
Rescuer, very good. Anybody else? Pop your hand up. Yeah, there's one over there. Go on, Michael.
Smeared.
Sorry?
Smeared.
Smeared, what do you mean by that?
Anointed with anointing.
Oh, you mean anointed. Ah, now that's a very Bible-y word, but it's very good. You could put it with Ben's and make anointed king, which is what the word really means. Anybody else want to add anything? Yes.
The one who'd been promised.
Excellent. The one who'd been promised, anticipated, waited for. So there's promises, he's going to be a king, he's going to be anointed, something of a superhero, something of a king. Okay, wonderful. I knew you wouldn't let me down. Well done, everybody. So yes, the idea of Messiah has been taken, it's got some cultural significance. Like I mentioned Dune, if you've seen or read Dune, like that's a big part of that story too. But this is where the word originally comes from. Jesus was the Messiah. He was the original Messiah. Jesus was the anointed king, the savior, the long-awaited rescuer. And so if we really want to know what Matthew means by Messiah, we kind of need to know the story that goes along with it. And the story is kind of played out in the first four-fifths of this book, like that much of this book. That's the story of the Messiah. And we don't have time to read all of that today. I thought we could try, but I thought we wouldn't get very far. And so instead of reading that today, we're going to watch a little video. So this is from our friends at the Bible Project. And this is them unpacking what the Messiah means, that word means. So we're going to start all the way at the very beginning and go all the way to the end. And so hopefully this will play. So let's watch this video. And we'll, before we do, I'm really sorry. That was really bad of me, wasn't it? Before we start the video, I just want you to be looking out for three things whilst we're watching. And they all begin with P. See, I can preach. The first one is, I want you to look out for the problem. What is the problem as articulated in this video? The second thing is, what is the promise? What promise does God make in the video? And the third thing is the prophets. What did the prophets say? So the problem, the promise, and the prophet. Okay, so here we go.
There's this crazy story at the beginning of the Bible. We have Adam and Eve, and they're in the Garden of Eden.
And everything in this garden is great. It's exactly as it should be, except there's this one tree that they're told by God not to eat from because it's dangerous and it will kill them.
So that's it. Avoid this fruit tree and we're fine.
Right. It seems pretty simple. But in this garden, there's a snake, and it starts telling a different story. It says that if you eat of this tree, it's not going to kill you. In fact, it's going to make you become like God.
And Adam and Eve, they believe the snake, and they eat the fruit.
And because of this, the goodness of the garden is tragically lost, and evil and death enters into God's good world.
Now, why is there a talking snake in the garden? I mean, this thing is a problem.
Yeah, it's very strange. And even more strange is the fact that the Bible doesn't say why or how this thing even got there. It just presents the snake as this creature who's in rebellion against God and that wants to get other people to doubt God's goodness and lead them on a path towards death. And so whatever this snake is, it's the source of evil that pervades our world and our lives, even still today.
But there is some hope, because right here in the story, God makes this really interesting promise to Adam and Eve.
That someone is going to come in the future, a son of Eve. And this guy's going to come and he's going to crush the serpent's head and destroy evil at its source. However, during this battle, the serpent is going to bite this guy's heel.
So it's like a mutual destruction.
Yeah, it's this very strange but beautiful promise. And it's just left hanging there until the next key moment in the story, when God singles out this guy named Abraham and says that through his family, goodness and blessing is going to be restored back to all of the nations of the world. And as we follow this family, we get to one of Abraham's great-grandsons, this guy named Judah. And he receives this promise that a king is going to come from his line and that the whole world's going to follow this king and he's going to bring peace and harmony and there'll be lots of food and wine and milk and vineyards and it's going to be awesome.
The first king that we meet from the line of Judah is a guy named King David. And he's a hero. Maybe he is the snake crusher.
But it turns out that David is infected with the same evil as the rest of humanity. He never crushes the snake, just the opposite. However, God makes a promise to David that this king is going to eventually come from his line. But as you go on in the story, one by one, each generation of his sons, they're just total chumps. They give in to the snake, they choose evil, they go after money and sex and power and following other gods.
Things get so bad that they run the nation of Israel right into the ground, and the big bad empire of Babylon just takes them out.
And so now there are no more kings to even fulfill this promise.
So it seems like the whole plan is lost.
But during these dark days, there's this crazy group of guys called prophets. And they just kept talking about this coming king and reminding us of the promise that he'll come, he'll defeat evil, he'll restore the garden. Now, one specific prophet, Isaiah, he tells us more about why this king is bitten. Isaiah says that the promised king receives this wound because of humanity's evil, and then it kills him. But then all of a sudden he comes back. And Isaiah says it's because he suffered this wound that he can now become a source of healing to other people.
But the Old Testament ends, and the snake-crushing king that everyone's been talking about never shows up.
And this is why, when the New Testament begins, it introduces us to Jesus of Nazareth, not as some random guy, but as someone who comes to fulfill these specific ancient promises.
Yeah, we learn that he's from the line of David, Judah, and Abraham.
And he goes around Israel announcing that the goodness of God's kingdom is here, now. And he begins confronting the effects of evil on people by healing them, by forgiving them of their sins and evil.
Many people are now believing that this is, in fact, the promised king.
But Jesus began telling his closest followers that he was going to become king and bring peace by taking the full effect of humanity's evil into himself.
The fatal snake bite wound.
Exactly. And so it seems like the serpent wins. And this story actually would be a tragedy except for what happens next. Jesus rises from the dead.
And now Jesus has the power over evil and death for himself.
And so the rest of the New Testament is then making this claim that Jesus' power over evil and death has now become available to us to begin confronting the effects of evil in our lives.
But even still, death and evil are a real problem in our world all around us.
And so the story of the Bible ends by describing this future day when Jesus comes back and he finishes the job. He destroys the snake once and for all, and he restores the goodness of the garden here on earth.
Okay, fabulous. What I'd like us to do now is, if we could just get back into those little groups that we formed where we're talking about Advent calendars, and I just want you to just, for a couple of minutes, answer those questions. Did you identify it? What was the problem in the video? What was the promise? And what did the prophet say and do? So, gather up into some little groups. It's totally legit to say, I don't know the answer to those questions. I wasn't paying attention. That's absolutely fine. But get into the groups, and just a couple of minutes, discuss the answers to those questions. Go for it. Okay, so hopefully in your groups you've had a chance to kind of articulate those things. Hopefully you kind of got some little answers to those questions. And so now we have a little bit more of a feel for the story, a little bit more of a feel for what everyone was waiting for. Let's just take a moment to imagine ourselves into that community. Let's imagine that we're a member of the nation of Israel during the very first Advent, that first time of waiting and anticipating and waiting, really waiting for the Messiah to come. Like you can imagine yourself as a fisherman or a shepherd. If you're struggling with that, just imagine yourself with a tea towel on your head. I couldn't resist, sorry. Just imagine yourself as part of that community. This is your story. This is your story. Your story goes back to the very dawn of time. Your story talks about the big reason for why the world is the state that it is. Your story is about how God has promised to restore the world through your community. Your story is full of promises and prophecies and hope that one day someone will come and make that happen. One day the Messiah would come. One day. And yet here you are. You're living in your land. It's been occupied by another nation. You're living in the land at their mercy. You're not free to live in the way that you would want to. The world seems to be getting darker and darker. You've been waiting for the Messiah to come for hundreds and hundreds of years. One of the things that that video didn't say is that between the people coming back from exile and Jesus coming was about 400 years. Over 400 years of waiting for the Messiah to come. 16 generations of waiting. Over 16 generations. And now it seems that things are darker and more desperate than ever. There's a little phrase, hope deferred makes the heart sick. I wonder what 400 years of deferred hope does to you. It got me thinking about how when we're expecting something, especially when we've been promised something, especially when we really need that thing that's been promised, we start with waiting for it, and then that waiting turns into hoping for it, and that hope turns into longing for it, until eventually, if we're honest, some of us might give up. We can only wait for so long. We can only hope for so long. We can only long for so long. And it makes me wonder, after 400 years of hoping, waiting, and longing, how many of that community had actually given up on God? How many had given up on the idea that the Messiah was going to come at all? How many had given that snake in the garden the satisfaction of being able to say that God is not good, that God is not coming? How many had relegated the promise of the Messiah coming to a cultural myth or a fairy tale? And it makes me wonder, as each of us as individuals and as a community sitting in here today, what is it that we're hoping for? What is it that we are waiting for? What are the things that we are longing for? Like, if I gave you to a moment to reflect now, like if you closed your eyes, in fact, let's do this. Why don't you just close your eyes? And I'm just going to give you a moment to reflect now. Like, what are the things in our lives that we're waiting for? What are we longing for? What are we hoping for? Maybe it's something relational, for a relationship to be restored, or hoping to meet a special someone, or hoping someone will forgive you. Maybe it's about provision. Maybe it's about a job or an opportunity. Or maybe it's a health thing. You're hoping for healing or hoping for the hope of healing. Maybe you have big questions. You're waiting, hoping, and searching for meaningful answers. What is it that you're hoping for, waiting for, longing for today? And now let's just take a moment to zoom out a little bit. Let's keep our eyes closed and just flip that, and let's think about our world. Like, what are some of the things that we're hoping for, longing for, and waiting for in this world? It could be some issue of injustice, of inequality. Maybe it's something to do with opportunity for women and girls in this nation and around the world. Maybe it might be a certain nation, our home nation, or another nation that we just hold really close to our hearts. Maybe it's something about children and young people in our city and in cities across the world. Longing for peace, longing for reconciliation, longing for a day when domestic violence is no longer a thing in our cultures. What is it big in the world that you're longing for and hoping for and waiting for? Let's just take a moment to call those things to mind, and maybe just a little moment whilst we've all got our eyes closed to just name your longing before God. To say a really simple prayer like, God, I'm longing to see peace in this place. I'm longing to see justice in this place. I'm longing to see healing in this place. As we head towards Christmas, you can open your eyes now if you would like to. You can keep them closed if you want to. As we head towards Christmas, there's a famous prophecy which we've already heard today from the book of Isaiah. And as I read it, why don't we just hold those longings in front of us and hold them before the Lord. It says this, "Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who are in distress. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and the peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." And we read that because the beautiful truth that we celebrate at Christmas time is that despite 100 years of longing and hoping for God, God had not forgotten about his promise. Despite the deepness of the darkness that community found themselves in, the light still came. Despite all those who'd given up on him and decided he was not good after all, God still came in human form. He came as the Messiah. He came as the king that the world had been longing for. Into that great darkness, a great light shone. And so we're going to draw our time today together to a close with a song. Emily's going to come up and sing a song. Thank you. Emily's going to sing, O Come, Emmanuel. Now, the name Emmanuel means God has come to live with us. So really, the song is saying, come, God, come and live with us. Come and rescue us. And it celebrates the fact that Jesus was Emmanuel. He did come and dwell among us. But it also recognizes and articulates the longing for him to come, the longing for the light to conquer over the darkness. And today, I want us to end on the fact that we at the church are an Advent people. We are still a people waiting and longing for the Messiah to come. You know, we've just spent some time reflecting on some of the things in our own personal lives that we're longing for, and some of the really big things across the world that we're longing for, injustices that we're longing to see made right. And at Christmas time and in Advent, we remember and we identify with that very first community who celebrated Advent, or celebrated, who were waiting, hoping, and longing for Jesus to take a moment to join in with them in our waiting and our longing, to join our hoping to their hoping. As Christians, we believe that we are living in an in-between time. We believe that we're in a time between Jesus coming as a human at Christmas and him coming again sometime in the future. As Christians, we believe that when Jesus comes again, everything he started back then will be brought to its completion, that every tear will be wiped away, that every knot will be untangled, and that all our hopes will be fulfilled. But we live in that time in between those two realities. We live in that time in between. We don't know how long we will be waiting and longing and hoping. But today we join in with hundreds and thousands of years of people in the community of God and join our voice with theirs as we say thank you to Jesus for coming as Emmanuel, God with us. And we long for the day when he will come again as Emmanuel, God with us again. So why don't we all stand together? Now, it might be that you would like to sing along with this song if you know it, if that's helpful for you. It might be that you just want to listen to Emily singing it. I've just made you all stand up, but you can sit down if you want to, whatever you're most comfortable doing. But let's just take this moment, let's listen to these words, and let this song be our prayer. The longing to see Jesus come in all of his fullness to wipe away every tear from every eye, to come and fulfill our hopes, to fulfill our waiting, to fulfill our longings. Let's pray as we sing.